Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Kazakhstan is headed to the presidential elections this week. Though former President Nazarbayev's hand-picked candidate, the interim leader Kasym Jomart Tokayev, is almost certain to win the elections, nevertheless, it's an important exercise given this will be the first such exercise without Nazarbayev's name on the ballot. Another color in this process has been so far is the presence of an independent candidate and also unprecedented youth activism leading to the elections. So what all these mean for Kazakhstan going forward? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Asim Zhapishiva, one of the active members of ongoing youth movement in Kazakhstan. Joanna Lilis is with us, who's the chief Central Asia correspondent for EurAsiaNet, also joining us from Kazakhstan, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. I know it's kind of an awkward timing that we are doing this show now before the elections, but let's talk about the process leading to this moment, Joanna. Like how things have been so far. Certain things didn't go as planned by Nazarbayev, I guess. So what's the overall picture so far?
If we're talking about the actual election process, the electoral process, the campaign, it's really hard to actually find any highlights. I mean, we're seeing the electoral process, just as in the past, is being micromanaged by Nursultan, by the authorities, by the powers that be. It's a very lackluster campaign, even though what should be a highlight, I think, in this campaign is the presence of a candidate with some claim to to being an opposition politician. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't seen this for 14 years in Kazakhstan. Yeah. Amirjan Kharsanov has 20 years of opposition experience, but although he's been raising some very critical issues on the campaign trail, it's been in a really low-key way. So it's hard to find any highlights. I mean, I think one of the highlights for many people is probably been the way that the transition in general and the election has sort of galvanized people to try and start demanding a political voice when they haven't had one for so many years in Kazakhstan. And yet many people feel that this election is not even giving them one.
Mm. Okay, let's also take, Asim, your point in this one. Certainly for me, one of the highlights so far has been the youth activism. The energy that you guys brought into this process is certainly refreshing. So what is your thoughts in terms of the highlights so far leading to the elections?
I agree with Joanna because of these elections are not legitimate and we do not accept these elections outcomes and such elections cannot be considered legitimate, if I repeat myself. And I think that the main thing for us on these elections this time is that young people in Kazakhstan are finally, they are, including myself, we are finally in the process, if I can put it this way. And right. Before these elections, we didn't have such interest in politics among young people.
Yeah.
So I think that is the main highlight for me and for our movement.
Okay, terrific. Bruce, I also want to take your point on this. So what have you been witnessing differently than the elections that Kazakhstan held in the past? Anything similar, anything different?
Well, I mean, clearly the fact that Nazarbayev isn't participating in this election is already something that's very different from the previous elections. You know what, I would agree that Joanna said it's hard to point to any highlights, but there are plenty of lowlights here. You know, and I thought it was indiscreet or certainly not wise for Tokayev to mention some of the things that he has so far. Just earlier, was it this week or something, that he mentioned that they'd been planning this transition for 3 years and Nazarbayev had a list of several successors that he had been looking at when he was thinking about leaving power. And I'm like, you know, just the term successors, I'm like, well, you know, you are involved in an election that you're trying to portray as being competitive. And when you make comments like that, you just show, that this whole thing is rigged from the start. Tokayev made a comment a month or so ago that any criticism of the government should be or authority should be sanctioned. And I'm like, well, do you not get the idea of criticism? You know, so I mean, mean, he's been clumsy in his campaigning, even though we know that, you know, he's the favorite and he's almost nearly certain to win. I can't imagine that he would lose, but some of his statements have betrayed the fact that this is just a mockery of an election, and I thought it would have been a little smoother than that.
Okay, Joanna, the campaign, the candidates, what they were doing, how they were campaigning, anything to talk about there?
Well, certainly. I mean, there has been a campaign, though I have to say that if you blink, you may miss it. Tokayev has been, I mean, you could say the most active. Of course, he has many resources at his disposal, including state resources, really. He's been jetting around the country in as much as you might say a character as staid as him actually jets anywhere. But he's been jetting around and trying to certainly... make his mark, if you like, on the people. He's certainly made a few populist statements. He was out west a few days ago, out in the west of Kazakhstan, which is, of course, the oil-rich country. And it's also known as a source of disaffection where people feel they generate Kazakhstan's wealth, but they don't benefit enough from it. He was calling for equal salaries for local and foreign expat oil workers, which is a festering grievance, and for things like that. So he's also been reaching out to people with lower pay, and he's been talking about the kind of things that bother people. However, you know, I mean, from the point of view of many people, of course, is that he's promising actually continuity of the policies that led to the problems that he's talking about. So that is a kind of dichotomy between his promises and his manifesto. Looking at the other candidates, I mean, they have been very inactive. The candidate portraying himself as Kazakhstan's, you know, only opposition candidate here in the election, Amazhan Kosanov, he's been active on social media for sure, and he's been doing quite a lot of criticism, raising all kinds of things that have been taboo in previous elections, you know, in his Facebook broadcast, for example, such as political reform. He's called for an investigation into the shootings of oil workers in Zhangozhen. He's called for wide-ranging political reform. He said that dissenters would not be jailed under him, with a, you know, pointing at the jailing of people, including for unfurling a banner calling for a fair election. So he's saying all the right things, but I think people feel that he's been rather lackluster, that he's putting his message out in such a measured way that it's hardly reaching anybody. Other candidates have been barely visible, apart from one who went into a nightclub and told people to drink the traditional Kazakh drink of kumis, the dairy drink, instead of vodka. That's a clear stunt, you know. So the campaign, you have to say, it's been very, very lackluster. I mean, Tokayev knows he's going to win. Right. Everybody knows he's going to win. Everyone's behaving that way, including Tokayev and including the man claiming to be an opposition candidate. So I don't think you can say it's fired people up. And you go around the streets of Almaty, there are some big billboards of Tokayev and of a few of the other candidates. There are some torn election posters. So I think we can say it's been very lackluster, and it's been very clear that this, even though the authorities are trying to say this is Kazakhstan's most competitive yet election, they say, or certainly the number in 14 years, yes. But it doesn't make it competitive, and it certainly isn't going to make it fair when, you know, all the odds are stacked in favor of Tokayev because of the way the electoral proceedings are controlled by Nur-Sultan.
Yeah. Asim, I think the youth activists were putting their eggs in the basket of Kosanov, the opposition candidate. So what's thinking among you guys about his performance so far?
Well, if we talk about Kosanov, he's more active on social media. Nice. He is very active on Telegram Messenger. And if we talk about his criticism and his messages are more brave or harsh on Telegram Messenger. And before the elections, we had, apart from our movement, there are five partisan movements in Kazakhstan, and they all had their channels on Telegram, and since April they all renamed their channels, and they all now supporting Kosanov. And Kosanov is also using our hashtags, and he's using our faces, including Asya Tulesova's face and Bibara's and my messages sometimes, to promote his agenda. But we do not support him, because we don't agree with these elections, and we think the fact that he is the only candidate from opposition in 15 years, he's still pro-government, and he's just playing their games. So we do not support him.
So is there anyone you support in the list of candidates now? That
No, we don't support anyone, and we are going to protest, actively protest this elections.
Okay, we are going to talk about what you have in mind going forward. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Bruce, you know, though Nazarbayev is not on the ballot, but his candidate is there. So how much of a factor has he been so far in this process?
Well, I mean, he's throwing his support behind Tokayev, right, you know, regularly. You know, and as was already mentioned, Tokayev has stated clearly that he's going to continue Nazarbayev's policies. So if you were looking for change under a new president, then you can't be disappointed anymore, because he's already said he won't do anything different. You know, certainly everyone understands that this is Nazarbayev's candidate. The whole apparatus is going to work to ensure this guy wins, put him in office, make him look good. And although Nazarbayev kind of has not come forward too often, you know, he's come up in key moments and thrown his support behind him. And other than that, he's, you know, he meets with foreign dignitaries when they showed up. They just had the Eurasian Economic Community or Union Summit, and Nazarbayev met with everybody there. So, I mean, he's playing the role of diplomat more than first president, I should say. But everyone understands that he's still going to be the power, and the guy he's putting there is just going to do pretty much exactly what he wants.
So he wants
him to do.
He's not taking part in any rallies like that, right?
No, I mean, when he makes public appearances, he always makes it clear who he's supporting. Okay. But I haven't seen, I don't know, maybe a summer, Joanna has seen him come forward at a campaign rally, but I don't remember that particularly. Obviously, he was at the Nur-Otan Party conference, right, and threw his weight behind Tokayev when Tokayev was nominated. But I haven't seen him, like I said, going out and actually campaigning for Tokayev. I don't think he needs to, actually.
Okay. Joanna, did you have the chance to sit down and talk to the opposition candidate, Kosanov?
Yeah, I have talked to him. I mean, he's up in Astana and I'm in Almaty at the moment for the campaign, although he's normally based here. But I spoke to him by phone last week quite extensively, and I put to him some of the criticism mm-hmm. that has been leveled at right. him by people who support the opposition, indeed, even though he's an opposition candidate, and by activists, for example, who are, you know, involved in the movement that Assem is involved in, who believe that the election is not legitimate and so on. And what he had to tell me was that he doesn't accept, you know, criticism that he is not an opposition candidate. He says he's been raising some very critical issues, which, as I mentioned before, is mm-hmm. true. But of course, people feel that it's very much in a low-key way. You know, another criticism that's been leveled at him is that his very presence, because he carries a lot of weight as an opposition figure with his two decades of experience of criticizing the regime, his very weight, you know, makes it easier for the authorities to legitimize this election, even though, you know, they control the electoral proceedings, that they're not fair, there's no free media, that people haven't had many years to form their opinions, that the opposition's been denied any access to the political space and the media over all these years, not to mention all the rigged elections that have gone before. So, you know, I put that to him, that his presence, some people are criticizing him because his presence legitimizes yeah. the vote. Mm-hmm. For the authorities, very conveniently, even though he has no chance of winning, but he denied that, said it could be legitimized in many ways. If he wasn't there, they would choose someone else to legitimize it, which I don't think is really true, but his weight is something for the authorities. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, a big question here in Kazakhstan, there are a lot of rumors that he struck a deal of some sort or another with the authorities, by which people mean, for example, some sort of political representation in the coming years, in the Tokayev ruled, if you like, Kazakhstan. In other words, the registration of a party. Kazakhstan currently has no real opposition parties, or most likely representation in parliament after the next election, as the authorities try to legitimize Tokayev's rule and try to show they're trying to stave off perhaps criticism and protest moods, which are really evident in Kazakhstan in this transition phase, by saying, look, we are being more pluralistic and more legitimate, hence Kasanov's presence in the election. Right. And many believe that he'll be in the next parliament.
Mm. How he would explain, like, his calculated messaging, or maybe controlled messaging? Maybe he believes in what he says, maybe he believes in the position he's taking in, or there is something more to it?
he actually denies that he's toning down his messaging in any way, and says that, you know, you have to look at what I'm saying, you have to look at my program, it's progressive, it's everything we've been saying for 20 years, it's calling for democratic reforms, it's calling for reduction in the powers of the presidency, although it stops short of calling for an actual parliamentary republic, as, you know, the people of political message that Assem and people associated with her group are talking about. And so he denies toning it down. I mean, he did say quite candidly to me that, you know, he has warned all his campaign people and all the people who are volunteering in the regions that they mustn't do anything that could, you know, get him struck off the ballot, anything illegal or anything that could be construed or used as a pretext to get him off the ballot. But you know, I mean, he personally denies that he's toning down his messaging, but his messaging, although it's coming across very forcefully, say, on Telegram or social media, on Facebook, you have to go out and look for it. It's not out there, you know, even in the debate. You have to say, you know, he was just quietly sort of reading out his messages, as same as the other candidates were in the presidential debate on TV. It wasn't, you know, forcefully kind of, you know, calling for reform or, you know, making a forceful statement in a really forceful political way.
Okay. Assem, there is also one female candidate, correct? I heard nothing about her, what she has been doing so far.
I didn't know that she's from Akhzal Party, and her name is Yespaeva. I forgot her name. Her surname is Yespaeva. And Dania, right. Although I consider myself a feminist, I don't want to vote for her, and no one wants, actually. And she's just, I think a few weeks ago when she was interviewed, she said that Kazakhstan needs a strong male leader. So I don't think she's a real candidate. And I don't think that apart from Tokayev or Kusanov, anyone in Kazakhstan even considers other candidates, because we all know who they are and we all know why they're there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how many people we have on the ballot?
Seven?
Seven, right?
I think it's seven people. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's next for these seven people? And what's next for Kazakhstan? What's next for the opposition candidate? And what's next for Tokayev and Nazarbayev? And more importantly, what's next for the youth activists for Assam's group? Though these are risky questions, but let's go for it anyway. But I have to recap the debate first, that today on the Majlis I'm joined by Assem Japishiva, one of the activist members of the youth movement in Kazakhstan, Joanna Lilis, Chief Central Asia Correspondent for EuroAsianet, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi, and I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the presidential elections in Kazakhstan. So considering that Tokayev will win the elections, although, Bruce, maybe Bessie has a chance, maybe lose the election?
Only if there's an act of God.
Okay, considering that he will win.
God in Kazakhstan.
That was interesting. Okay, so considering that he will be the next leader, so what's waiting for him?
It's hard to say a lot, but there's certainly significant discontent with the fact that he's running basically as a double for Nazarbayev, you know, and people want to see some change, you know, it's expected. You get a change of leaders, you want to think that something new, something beneficial will happen, you know, and so that's what's out there. People, you know, we see these campaigns and said, I have a choice. Yeah. You know, I woke up in a country where there was... The people, especially the younger people, are sending a message that some of this stuff has to change. It can't stay the same like it is now. And, you know, and Joanna mentioned Tokayev's been out west and other places, and he's raising some of the issues that are bound to get him, you know, or at least keep people from booing him and throwing stuff at him, I suppose. You know, so how much change he's actually going to do, I don't know. I've been thinking about that. What does he do? Well, obviously, you know, we've got the mothers with many children, and he'll be almost certainly... keep mentioning that and saying no, we're going to get some programs, and he'll talk about keeping wages the same, and I imagine he'll say a lot of things about trying to keep the tenge at the same rate it's at now, at least at that rate, if not try to strengthen it somehow or another. But you know, these kind of hollow promises that you hear all the time from any candidate in any place, he just doesn't have anything that looks like it's going to change a lot. I don't want to look too far ahead, but of course the question in my mind is, what happens when Nazarbayev dies? If he died soon, in the next year or two, what would happen then? Because then, you know, we know that Tokayev is surrounded by Nazarbayev loyalists, but that's the only time I see when there might be a chance for a break in some of the same policies we've seen for years now.
Mm. Okay, Joanna, let's go into this one. Where Nazarbayev see himself going forward? Like, again, things didn't go well as he planned, so what's ahead for him?
Well, I mean, as you say, I mean, I don't think things went entirely to plan. I mean, this is one of the things in Kazakhstan. You've got very, Nazarbayev and his entourage have got very much used to ruling in a top-down manner and deciding what happens for people. They eradicated opposition, eradicated free media, pressure civil society into almost non-existence. And they expect everyone to fall into line, but actually people are not falling into line.
Yeah.
For Nazarbayev himself, I mean, he expects to continue to kind of, you know, pull the strings, to have a great say over everything that's happening. And he will while he's there. And that could be potentially, that's, you know, slightly problematic for Tokayev. And we can't rule out internal tensions within their sort of tandem, if you want to call it that. Although, obviously, it's very, very clear that Nazarbayev has, you know, the ultimate authority in Kazakhstan right at the moment. But, you know, it still could be a tense time, although clearly Tokayev will knuckle under. It's also going to be interesting to see how all the mechanisms that have been put in place for Nazarbayev's retirement, how they actually take effect, because they've been in place since for a couple of years, the most recent ones, although many have been enacted over the years. You know, for Nazarbayev to have a post-retirement role, it's not been tried anywhere in Central Asia and really not anywhere in the region, as far as I know, for the you know, the president to keep as an ultimate overseer. It's not like the Putin-Medvedev tandem in Russia, where they swapped places.
Okay.
And so, you know, we don't know how that will play out. Will Parliament step up to the plate and start playing a role if it gets more teeth in the form of some opposition? Will the government become more active? Probably not. It will remain technocratic. But Nazarbayev sees himself as right there in charge, basically. And that's how he sees himself over the coming years. But as Bruce points out, he's getting older. You know, he's 78. He'll be 79 this year. You know, everyone's mortal. And I think what's really clear here is that his installment of Tokayev, it doesn't resolve the succession question, because Tokayev is a pretty toothless figure, and he's clearly there as a neutral figure to kind of keep the peace for the moment. But what happens, as Bruce says, when Nazarbayev is no longer on the political scene? This sort of fight over the succession and everything, really, it's only just beginning, and that could bring, you know, plenty of instability, elite infighting. Everyone still has everything to play for and everything to lose as Kazakhstan moves ahead.
Yeah, you know, over the past 2 months since the Tokayev is running the country in the interim capacity, and I always wondered that what Tokayev might have been feeling when he would see Nazarbayev receiving the ambassadors, Nazarbayev speaking to the visiting presidents. I don't know how long Tokayev will be comfortable playing the role that he has been playing so far.
I mean, I think Tokayev is very clear about what his role is. And, you know, I guess that given as far as we know, he's not politically ambitious, which is kind of it laughable when you say it about the president, really.
Right.
But, you know, when so many people around Nazarbayev are politically ambitious, he's installed someone who's clearly not politically ambitious.
Right.
So I think, I mean, I guess things could change and Tokayev could develop a taste for power, but most likely he'll knuckle under accept his role, and probably he knows what his role is, so he probably doesn't think much of it when Nazarbayev's out there behaving like the president in many ways, and not just on the international stage. In Kazakhstan too, he's very visible right now, even if he's not right there next to Tokayev campaigning or whatever. But I do think Tokayev knows what his role is, and is probably more or less at this point comfortable with it.
Okay, interesting. You know, I think about the Atambayev Gene Bekov scenario.
Indeed.
Perhaps the question of what's next is more relevant to you guys than anyone else in this process. So what's in your agenda? You know, what's next for Oyan Kazakhstan? I've seen your declaration. You guys are very much fired up. You know, what's next?
Well, for us, first of all, we think that the presidency must be deprived of its powers in Central Asia, especially in Kazakhstan. We don't need president anymore. And
wow.
Excessive power in Nazarbayev's hands led to, you know, abuse and authoritarianism. That is why we are demanding transition into parliamentary republic. with separation of powers, and also we are demanding to for our local mayors, akims, and maslihats to be elected through the majoritarian system, and that also that their powers must be expanded. That's our main demands, and that is what we're going to achieve in 5 to 10 years.
How,
I think.
You know, these
that's
these
the
are
plan for us.
That's a bold demands, Assam. So how you plan to achieve that?
Well, we're not calling for, you know, for a revolution or
right.
anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
For now,
mm-hmm.
we cannot, because of the security reasons, I cannot tell you right now how we are going to achieve all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But in the coming few months, there are rumors that our parliamentary election is going to be announced and held this autumn.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to start from September, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Actively, we are going to start to work actively from September.
Okay. So Bruce, you know, the fact that there is no active God, so Tokayev is going to win. That's just how it looks like. So what awaits for Kusanov then? I mean, do you see a political future for him in Kazakhstan after the election?
It depends on how you want to look at this. Now, you know, Nazarbayev, I've heard the argument before that actually the presidency might be weakened under the second president, because Nazarbayev wouldn't want anyone to ever have the same kind of power that he had. And, of course, he has all these guarantees and benefits that come with being the first president of Kazakhstan. So that's possible. Now, they might, just for international appearances, allow opposition to come back into parliament. I mean, they were there really for half of Kazakhstan's history, the first half. And they weren't enough to change the legislation that the president wanted to push through. But there were some people there, and they were able to bring up issues that the opposition thought were important and call for some changes. So it's not inconceivable that you would let Kasanov register a group and take 3 or 4 seats in parliament or something, you know. And then, of course, as they used to way back 15, 20 years ago, then they could, when people criticized the Kazakh government for lack of democratic reforms, democratic institutions, they can point to this and say, well, we do have legitimate, you know, genuine opposition people in parliament. You know, they don't say only a couple, but you know, so it was never harmful for that,
right,
for the government. It was never a challenge for the government either to let those people in to parliament. So you know, that would be a start, at least. I could see that happening in the next few years, especially since, you know, Tokayev's legitimacy, certainly in the eyes of Western nations, democratic nations, is really tainted already. Everyone's going to see what's happening here. They've already seen, they understand he was the handpicked successor. He's going to win the election easily because the whole weight of the government is behind him at the moment. So he needs something so that he can appeal when he goes to leaders in Western Europe or the United States, you know, places like that, and try to show that there is some progress in Kazakhstan, and something that separates him from Nazarbayev a little bit without making Nazarbayev look bad at the same time.
Mm. You know, I also wondered, Joanna, that, you know, Tokayev was very much in public even before becoming the interim president. So how he has been as a leader, and what does it tell you about what kind of leader he's going to be in the future?
Well, I think Tokayev set the tone for his rule with his inauguration speech. I mean, that's when people set the tone for their rule. Okay, when he was inaugurated as interim leader, I'm talking about. We'll see what he says when he's inaugurated after he's elected. But he really set the tone there with a very fawning, backward-looking speech, fawning over Nazarbayev, and really looking backwards at the past, which frustrated many people. You know, we're looking at talking about Nazarbayev's legacy, which many people in Kazakhstan do admire elements of it anyway. But, you know, it's maybe not the moment if you're trying to, you know, look forward. And this was very backward looking. And of course, one of the things that set the tone for Tokayev's rule and for how people perceive him as a leader was the sort of very top down decision, or if you like, suggestion to rename Astana after Nazarbayev, to rename it Nur-Sultan. And, you know, we know that provoked an enormous amount of frustration among people, that their name of their city or the capital of their country was snatched away and replaced without a moment's consultation, just seconds into, or if you like, minutes into Tokayev's rule. So, you know, I think that set the tone for what kind of leader he's going to be. On the other hand, people do see some positives in him. He's sober-minded. He's not rash. He's renowned for, you know, as a diplomat, he's known for consensus building. And all of these things are also positives in a leader. But, you know, I think it's also a bit of a mistake for us to be talking in a way for to sort of see Tokayev as any kind of a leader, because he's actually what he is. He's in an officially designated position, fulfilling a role. He's not expected to really lead, although, of course, he is expected to carry the people along to a degree. But again, we go back to that point about the top-down decision-making and how many people are not being carried along, as we see from movements like the one ASEM is involved in. And also, of course, we see it in public protests. These involve different people who have many different grievances, from political disenfranchisement to socioeconomic grievances.
Right. In our one of the previous conversation about the election process, I remember one of our speakers saying that regardless of whatever the outcome of this election might be, this won't be the same elections, this won't be the same Kazakhstan. So given all the country has gone through so far over the past 2-3 months, did it contribute to anything, Bruce, in terms of new Kazakhstan?
Well, you know, I mean, everyone makes a big deal out of the fact this is the first presidential election they're ever going to have in Kazakhstan without Nursultan Nazarbayev competing. You know, I think one of the things, and I know people have been going back and forth about this on Twitter and other social networks too, but, you know, what percentage of the vote does he get? You know, does Tokayev get with this? Now, so that's going to tip us about how they're managing this to begin with. You know, is he going to get... I'm not sure what would be a realistic vote or something that even gave the appearance of legitimacy out there. You know, he's walking a fine line. He's certainly not going to get 95-98% like Nazarbayev got. On the other hand, he can't get too low, because then it looks like maybe he's not so popular as they want to portray him to be. So that's one thing that I'm looking for in this election. This is the first time where you don't have the great leader out there, and so how are they gonna manage this? But then again, like I said, if it was something like Kyrgyzstan, say, and it won't be, but if he won with 54% of the vote, then that opens up too many problems. You know, where all of a sudden everyone that is disaffected with the way this is going so far goes, well, you know, there you go, there's proof, and this is another reason for me to go out in the street and start protesting. So, you know, that's, I think, one of the first tests of how this election is going to be, is what are the percentages going to be at the end to try to make it look like he's popular enough to win, not as popular as Nazarbayev, but yet the election is something they can hold out in front of the OSCE and other governments and say, no, look, the results are, you know, this is a legitimate election. You can see that there was some competition here.
Yeah.
Can I just interject here, Mohammed? I just wanted to say that I think we've probably got quite a good idea of what Tokayev is going to get from the latest opinion polls, given that the opinion polls are very controlled. They're only allowed to be conducted by two companies that are officially sanctioned by the government, and anyone else conducting them is being punished and fined. I think we can say that, you know, the polling situation is very difficult in Kazakhstan. I mean, it doesn't mean these polls reflect reality, but I think we can say that they probably reflect what the candidates are going to get, given that the government controls both the election and the polling companies. So basically, what we saw in the most recent poll was Tokayev on 72%. And so I think we can probably say that he's probably going to get in the region of that. I mean, I may be wrong and I may be sticking my neck out. I agree with Bruce that he can't be seen to be too popular or too unpopular.
Right. Assam, so what would be kind of things that you will be looking at
After the elections, we have other things to do, and we're not interested in these elections at all.
Right.
Because we don't think they are legitimate, and we are going to protest these elections and spoil our ballots and post everything on social media, which is legal for now. And right after the elections, there are rumors that about the protests and everything. And
is there anything that, which if happens, you will hold off your protests? Or you are determined
that you will go for that? No, nothing is going to happen. Mm-hmm. If we talk about these elections, nothing is going to happen. Tokayev, he will be getting 70 to 75%. Kosanov is from 8 to 10%. And all the other candidates will get from 3 to 1 to 3%. So everything is scripted and nothing's going to happen. happen.
Everything is fixed as you think.
Yeah.
Okay, Bruce, so let's end the discussion. So what would be kind of things that you will be looking at to determine where things are headed going forward in Kazakhstan after the elections?
What happens on June 10th? And next week in general, because from just watching the way the campaign's been going, I think groups like Assem's group and other groups they already know what's going to happen, and they're already planning on what they're going to do after the election to show that they don't consider this to have been an election that represented their interest, and they don't consider the elected president to be their choice of leader for the country. So that's what's going to be curious. I think that will probably be the biggest change in Tokayev's time as opposed to Nazarbayev's time, is that we're going to see discontent and signs of discontent, and nothing that threatens to overthrow the government, but I think that the people will be a lot more forceful in getting their view out there, that they don't want to just sit back and listen to what the government tells them to do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Joanna, also just quickly, your future looking perspective on the developments post election in Kazakhstan. What are the things that you will be looking at, and also what are some of the first tests that Tokayev is going to face if he is elected as a president?
Well, the first thing I'd single out, it's both something we should be looking at and a test. How ready will Tokayev, will the powers that be after the election be to be open to listening to calls for reform? And there are some people believe there's a sort of struggle going on within the administration. Some are hawks. They think they should crack down on any signs of dissent, as we've seen with arrests of protesters, jailing of the people who unfurled a banner at the Almaty Marathon, and so on. Some people believe there were also doves in the administration who think they should, loosen the screws a bit to allow let off steam, and also to cater for some of this disaffection that the transition has unleashed. And I think, and so that's what we should be looking for. And the second thing I would single out is all the challenges that have long beleaguered the administration remain for Tokayev or for the leaders to tackle, and I'm really talking here about the socio-economic grievances that have been bringing people out onto the streets for, months or more. And, these are things that have been, created by the system, the problems, unemployment, low salaries for people who are employed, underemployment, housing problems. Now, all these things have been festering for years. And, under Nazarbayev, the system was unable to tackle them. And so it's hard to see how a weak president like Tokayev could also tackle them. But that's a challenge that lies ahead for him or for the rulers in general as Kazakhstan goes ahead.
Okay, let's see that. Okay, thank you very much, Joanna Lilis, Chief Central Asia Correspondent for EuroAsianet, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia Blog, Kishlak Owazi, and of course, Asim Japashiva, youth activist in Kazakhstan. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.